Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the MLB Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I am Mark Warner, along with my esteemed co-host and content manager, Chris Lisa. This is our free agency season finale episode. We're going to be taking a little break here, and we have a few things to announce that we're going to be working on in the next few weeks. So we're going to take a little hiatus and get all this stuff straight and get ready for the next season, which will be the inaugural season of the Vegas Golden Knights, as everybody knows. So we're looking forward to that. Chris, good day to you, sir.
Good day to you, sir. Yes, exciting week this week for the Vegas Hockey Podcast.
Yeah, let's go right to that. We're jumping in with a couple of hockey websites that are just getting off the ground. It's our pleasure and privilege, really, to be associated with these two websites as they get off the ground, be part of their inaugural podcast teams. First, let's talk about Chad DiDomenici's site, Grandstand Sports Network, grandstandsports.com. Chris, tell them about the Grandstand.
Yeah, it's you know, Chad has been a guest on this show, a great writer on the Buffalo Sabres, and he approached us about being one of the first podcasts on this new site, which I believe is going to be up over the next week, no later than 2 weeks. So I think they're going to have an announcement with us on Tuesday. So regarding the Vegas Hockey Podcast, so. Yeah, we're really looking forward to partnering with Chad and expanding, you know, having more people find the Vegas Hockey Podcast.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That we're joining that affiliation. Everyone knows we're already affiliated with thehockeywriters.com and part of their podcast page, and just expanding with SoundCloud and iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. Now we're jumping in with Grandstand Sports and another. You know, show favorite of ours, Russ Cohen, is also putting together an audio boom channel that he's invited us to join with as part of their launch as well. So tell them about the audio boom channel.
Yeah, it's a great thing. You know, I reached out to Russ on a question, and it quickly turned into, you know, talking about doing a partnership with him. And Russ's reputation is phenomenal. As good as his reputation is as a hockey guy, he's that good of a guy as well. So we saw that first and foremost this week when we spoke to him, both of us. So really excited about that as well. You know, Russ knows the league inside and out. He knows the prospects.
Absolutely.
And he knows the coming draft guys inside and out, going to all the combines, and I think he's at the development camp this weekend for the Flyers. So yeah, really excited about both relationships, and we'll have both guys on the show, you know, a couple times at least next season as well.
Well, certainly we'll have to do a show with each one individually to, you know, let everybody know where to find the sites and how to get in touch with all the content that they're going to have. Both first-rate individuals. We have all the confidence in the world that their sites are going to be first-class, first-rate as soon as they get launched. And everyone needs to go over to the Audio Boom channel with Russ and GrandstandSports.com and check out all the good stuff that the chat has over there, because they both – I mean, if you've listened to the show at all and you've heard these guys talk, that one thing they know inside and out is the National Hockey League and hockey in general as well. So it's our privilege and honor to announce these two new affiliations for the show with our growing listenership. It is definitely a nice boost to the show and our platform. And we really appreciate Chad and Russ reaching out to us and inviting us to become a part of their team. It's our privilege to join them. And speaking of our growing listenership, I've been watching Sweden on our analytics site that we use. Our fans in Sweden are amazing. They're up to 10% of total listens over there. So a special shout out to our fans in Sweden. If anyone wants to email the show, MarkWarner@VegasHockeyPodcast.com. If you're from Sweden, I will mail you a Vegas Hockey Podcast polo shirt in your choice of colors, just because we appreciate you guys so much. That's a special end of the year deal for all of our Sweden fans who really show up big in the last season with listening to the show and reaching out. So email the show, MarkWarner@VegasHockeyPodcast.com, and I will get you a Vegas Hockey Podcast golf polo shirt out to you as soon as we can, just to show our appreciation for the audience in Sweden. We love you guys. And I know Chris has some for the fans in Sweden as well.
Yeah, I hope everyone checks out my recent article that posted the other day, especially the Swedish audience. The Islanders' young netminder, who's probably the most talented young goalie in Sweden, Linus Sundström, who was amazing in prospect camp last week out here on Long Island, and the future's very bright for him, and word is he's going to spend one more year in Sweden and then come over the following year to North America and be part of the Islanders' goaltending tandem, which works out perfectly because Yaroslav Halak is on the last year of his deal. So the timing works out well for everyone all involved.
Nice, nice.
And that's at eyesonisles.com, and I'll have a new article tomorrow as well on another topic.
All right. Well, everybody, make sure to get over to Ion Isles and check Chris's stuff out, and follow Chris on Twitter at thenlking.com. Well, this is our end of the deal here. So we're gonna go through free agency. Any other moves and trades that are, you know, significant over the past week, the first day or two. I thought we were gonna have a more frenetic pace, but it seemed like everybody that was going to sign, the big fish was Shattenkirk, I guess, and it was rumored to be going a couple places, but Rangers ended up with him. But most everybody else kind of had leaked out where they were going, so there wasn't any real blockbusters of what was going on. But what may have been the most important signing there on July 1st, and it wasn't a free agent signing, was Connor McDavid with the Edmonton Oilers signing his 8-year, $100 million deal, which makes him the highest annual average hit in the league by $2 million over both Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. And then Carey Price also this year is getting a bump up to $10.5 million. And I wanted to start with that because it might be the most important signing out of everybody in regards, obviously Connor McDavid stays in Edmonton until his free agency, but also as far as the economics go with what the cap ramifications are going to be for Edmonton, and also how it relates to the other superstars in the league, if you will, that are going to be coming up for deals in the near future. Is this a one-off, or is this set the market for the players that are going to be coming up in the next couple of years, and are they, you know, are they going to have an argument to, you know, ask for maybe more money than had previously been available to the players in the league, Chris?
Yeah, it sets a new bar, is what it does. I don't think
it really does.
If you want to take the stance of Connor McDavid, even at the young age of 20 years of age, is the best player in the league and no one should make more than him, okay, fine. The problem's going to be, let's take someone like Jack Eichel as an example. He's the same draft class as Connor McDavid. If the Sabres want to sign him to a long-term extension, for instance, his agents could say, well, we know Jack is, at this point in time, you know, has not produced like Connor McDavid, but you know what? He's three-quarters, 80% as good, so we expect an eight-year deal at, you know, 80% of $12.5 million. And why don't we just round that number up by a few hundreds of thousand to make it an even number kind of thing. So, when I say this, I have nothing against Connor McDavid and his agents. God bless. They
get what you can.
With getting the best. Yeah, get what you can, for sure. But this, again, they did lock him up for the next 8 years. But keep in mind, he still has a year to go in his entry-level deal. And I believe he's at least 5 years away from free agency. And usually in sports, when, and you see it a lot in baseball as well as hockey, is when these kind of deals go down, the team approaches the player and says, look, we're want to extend you an eight-year offer. You're years away from free agency, and you're still a year away from your bridge deal. And we're going to give you so much security that you're not going to know what to do with it all. But, you know, and then you're going to work with us in terms of the money and all that jazz. And it's going to be mutually beneficial for both of us long-term, as long as, you know, you stay healthy and all that good stuff. Connor McDavid was basically treated like he was an unrestricted free agent. You mentioned Nathan Kane. It took them until they were a year away from unrestricted free agency after being a Stanley Cup winner to get that deal that they got. So this on so many levels is not good. I am sure that Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan had to have a stiff drink when this news first leaked out.
the beverage of choice.
Again, look at that. Look at their situation now. Austin, now if Matthews is 12 and a half, you know, what's Matthews, 11? I mean, then you got Mitch Marner, and you got Nylander. I mean, they're not going to get, you know, so, you know, it could wind up costing those three players. You talk about a cap crunch, and I firmly believe, just as strongly as I felt, and again, this is no way, shape, or form anything against these players.
It's economics.
These are actions by the owners and the front offices. But when the summer of before the lockout, when you had the Parisi, Suter, and Shea Weber deals, Shea Weber signed with the Flyers and then Nashville matched it, you knew that Armageddon was coming. And I'm not saying Armageddon is coming, but the way that the player salaries are raising and how much the cap is crawling, it's not going to be sustainable. So it's going to be another hard negotiation for the league. I know we're about, I think, 3 years away from that, but negotiations, they have not gone well the last couple of times. It's been very painful.
No, and you make a good point, and that'll bring us into the Leafs here. That's going to be if what they've done so far, they brought in Marlowe, three at six and a quarter. Hainsey and Moore, they're already $3.9 million over the cap right now. And, in the notes you sent me, Connor Brown is still out there.
Not signed.
They're already up against the cap, and those three players that you mentioned are on their entry level deals right now. I mean, 2 years away and 1 year away from their RFA deal. What do you think? Does it make sense for them to approach those three right now? And since they're not even allowed to talk to him yet, but when it becomes time, do they want to do the same thing with those three players? and that we just saw Edmonton do? Or do you try and milk them into bridge contracts? I think maybe the Leafs, it's a great point you make, Chris. I think maybe the Leafs are going to be the most affected by the Connor McDavid deal.
Yeah, that's a tough call. You know, maybe they'll do it for Matthews and take more of a conservative approach with the other two. That's a tough call. They will have, you know, James Van Riemsdyk's on the last year of his deal if he's not traded this summer because they have to get under the cap. You know, a lot of people said, well, you know, they have Joffrey Loophole and Nathan Horton at, you know, $5 million and change each. And they can move them to long-term injured reserve. Yeah, they can, but I believe they can only do so on the second day of the NHL season, and they have to be cap compliant right before the NHL season. So yeah. They're gonna have to move some players out. Loophole comes off the cap after next year. He's got one more year to go, so they will have a couple of contracts coming off, and they have locked up their young defenseman over there. So, but yeah, no, it's definitely an issue. And I was a bit puzzled, to be honest with you, with Patrick Marleau, who's going to be 38 in September. I guess they must feel like he's a tremendous leader on the ice that will help this young team. And nothing against him. I mean, I think he can help them, but, you know, a 3-year deal at 6.25 at 38, boy, oh boy. And he spent his whole career in San Jose. You know, coming to Toronto, new team, new teammates. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'll be good next year. There'll be an adjustment period, but that, you know, I like the other two signings of Ainsley and Dominic Moore, but yeah, that was definitely, and he has a full no move clause as well. So that was definitely an eye popping one.
Yeah, that seems like term is a little excessive and salary is a little excessive on that.
Yeah.
I would say probably he wasn't going to get that in San Jose. We saw just a quick throw out for San Jose, Thornton with his 1-year, $8 million deal. They certainly weren't going to get Marleau done with 3 years at 6.25. So if, I mean, that offer's on the table, and again, not to bang the player, you're going to take that and you're going to go. And Marleau might be re-energized playing with this young core of players and be able to give that leadership in the locker room. I like the Hainsey. You know me, I looked into this a little bit during the week. I like the Hainsey signing. I'm very big on getting players that have climbed the mountain and have their name on the Stanley Cup into the locker room in young teams to show them the way and let them see what it takes to get to that level. The Sharp and Oduya signings a couple years back in Dallas, I don't think it was any coincidence that they went to the conference finals the very next season after bringing players like that into the room. And I think that the Hainsey signing might pay off more in that respect than on ice returns. And I like that more probably than, well, what do you think of the Dominic Moore? What does he bring to the team?
He's a great complimentary player. He can kill penalties. He's kind of a heart and soul guy. I know him from his time with the Rangers here. You know, 1-year deal at $1 million. You know, again, as taking a role on your fourth line, you team him up with Matt Martin, somebody else. He'll be a productive player, a very productive player as complimentary on a complimentary role for sure.
Well, I like bringing in the experience factor with Marleau as well. I like the Hainsey deal fresh off the cup. Leafs the playoff team again next year? Probably so, right?
Probably so. Still, you know, the defense and, you know, because they're short of defensemen from the standpoint of currently. They, you know, Hunlick went to Pittsburgh. They signed Hainsey, so, you know, that's a one-for-one. But, you know, again, I'm not making him out to be a superstar. But, you know, Pollock is a free agent, which they haven't signed, so... if they don't sign or trade for a free agent, trade for a defenseman, then that open spot is going to have to come from the pipeline.
Right. Well, let's move on. Let's stay in Canada and go to Montreal. They were one of the busier teams here. Even going back to the Drouin trade, they basically focusing on redoing their defense corps with Sergachev moving out. What do you make of the Habs?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, Alzner was a great pickup, and I actually thought he was going to get maybe a year more and maybe $1 million more per year. So 5 years, you know, at 4.6 and change, I thought was a good signing. You know, Joe Morrow and Shemenko will help them on the back end of the defense. You know, they lost Emelin in expansion. They traded Beauvau to Buffalo right before the expansion draft, then Markov. You know, I could re-sign him, but he's in a UFA right now, and I got to think that, you know, unless I can get him at a bargain price, probably won't. You know, Carey Price extension makes total sense. Obviously, you know, the elephant in the room is losing Radulov. This was a team last year, as we saw in the playoffs, that was pretty good defensively. You know, you had Carey Price, obviously. But other than Radulov against the Rangers, finding scoring was a gigantic problem, and well, now they lost.
Yeah, that's been the knock on the Habs the last couple seasons is where's the offense coming from, and Radulov, when we did our preview show at the start of the year, he was the wild card. I think he proved himself that he's bona fide and he's serious about being back in the NHL. Losing him, whatever you do on the defensive side, you're right back where you were.
Yeah, it's a big. To be fair to them, they were kind of in a between rock and a hard place. You know, damned if they did, and damned if they didn't. You know, giving Radulov, who I think is 31, a 5-year deal at $6 million per. You know, that's a tough contract, to be honest with you, in terms of age. In terms of productivity, we know he was not a choir boy prior to coming his first go around in the NHL. It seems like he matured, but there's a lot of risk involved in that deal. So I can understand their position, and look, they said that even though we desperately need him, this isn't Wayne Gretzky here. So they need to do. It's going to be hard because it's really, you know, there's guys who could help. I would use the terms help in free agency, maybe like a Thomas Vanek who could help. But between now and next year's trade deadline, they're going to need to find some forwards who can put the puck in the net. And maybe the plan of attack is, with, you know, having a top coach in Claude Julien is we got Carey Price. We're going to play good defense. We'll get by in the regular season till the trade deadline. We'll have it, you know, enough scoring to get by and be a top three team in the Atlantic. And then come the trade deadline, we're going to have to get a couple of people if we want to make a playoff run. I would think that would be the plan of attack.
Seems like it's the same plan. But I you know, just from watching social media, I can say Habs Nation is not really enthused about that plan.
Right. Well, it's like that movie. You remember the movie? Did you see the movie Argo a couple of years ago?
Yes.
You remember the line, there are only bad options. The only bad choices is finding the best option of the, you know, of the bad ideas, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Well, I guess we'll leave Habs in the wait and see category as far as grading what they've done in the offseason. I think they still have some more pieces to put together. Just a quick thought: the defense better, worse, different with the moves they've made. Are they going to get more offense out of the blue line?
I think Alzner. Yeah, no, I think it's better. I do think it's better.
Okay, so I mean, we all know that the squad in front of you makes the goaltender better as far as the six go. So, look for Carey Price to have maybe return to his form from a couple of years ago with an improved decor in front of him, and that's where they're banking their dollar on. Yeah. I'm gonna put them in the wait and see category. I think they're gonna be a playoff team for sure. But did the moves they make them a cup contender? That's I think the book's still open on that. Let's go down the Eastern Seaboard here, and we'll start in the South. Our friend Matt Pryor covers the Florida Panthers, and I think he was lukewarm to how the expansion draft and then what came after July 1st. Dadanov, the wild card from Russia. Well, there was talk for a while he was going to join Chippikoff here in Vegas, and that didn't work out. They bring in Radim Vrbata, but losing 30 goals and a very friendly cap hit in Marchessault out to Vegas, and also trading Riley Smith, probably a cap move for them. What do you make of what Florida's done, and did they do enough to get back to the playoffs?
Well, if Matt Pryor is lukewarm, I am ice cold. At the end of the day, I mean, look, I'm not going to tell you that Dadanov isn't going to be a good player for them. I have no idea. I don't think anyone.
Wild card. He's our Russian wild card this year, I got to say. Yeah, he's going to take Radulov's spot. Yeah. We don't know.
And I am not a big Vrbata fan. He does very well when he's on extremely bad teams and gets more meaningful minutes that way. He's 30. I know it's a one-year deal, but he's, I think, 35 going on 36. So to go Dadanov Vrbata from Riley Smith and Marchessault, that's a big drop off for me. I mean, but having said that, you know, the core of the team, you know, these guys aren't going to be the core of the team. You know, Ekblad, Bukestad, Barkov, sure. Huberto. Those guys are going to have to be stand up and be counted for. But I got to be honest with you. I think they're very iffy in a different way. I still don't love their goaltending, to be honest with you. I think it's okay. They have depth there, but that wasn't going to change regardless. But I think there's a lot of questions. And they've been trying to trade. The word is they've been trying to trade Jason Demers. And there was a rumor out there, take it what you will. They had a done deal with Vancouver, and he evoked his no trade clause, if that's true or not. But at this point, the team's really assembling their squads. I would say he's probably not going to get traded this summer. So I have a lot of questions about the Panther.
Yeah, let me bring the Vegas angle into it. Would you think McPhee? Is it fair to say that Florida's the team he got the most from of what they had available?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, obviously, it seemed to me that, you know, the Riley Smith thing was independent of who they lost in expansion. And they wanted that cap space. And for whatever reason, they went really down on Riley Smith, who, you know, had a terrific year the year before. Granted, he didn't have a great year last year, but I mean, to pick a number, there was a lot of Panthers that fell in that category. So again, I they're there behind the scenes and all that jazz, but obviously to get Riley's now, Marchessault is only signed for one more year, then he's a UFA. It's kind of a tricky situation. If you're Vegas, do you approach him this summer to see if you can sign him to a reasonable extension where, again, where I spoke before about, you know, security. So, for instance, if they went to him and say, hey, how about, you know, we give you a four-year deal at you know, $4 million a year, and you might say, well, why would he do that? He scored 30 goals last year. I'm like, well, because last summer he was the UFA and he signed a two-year deal for $1.4 million. So you're making $700,000 and someone put $16 million guaranteed on the table there. Would he, you know, again, would he do that with Vegas? Right, exactly. So would he do that? I don't know. And then if you play it out, if you're Vegas and say, okay, let's see how next year goes. And if he duplicates what he did last year, well, now you're looking at a really, potentially a really big number. And would you want to go that way? So we'll have to see with that. I get why he was exposed with the quality of they were going to lose somebody good. So they were one of the deeper teams in that regard. So I understand why they did, but I didn't understand the Riley Smith thing. I'd much rather have Riley Smith than Dandino.
Yeah, well, Riley Smith's the known commodity.
Right.
Dadding off the question off. I excuse me. We'll see. I think they're in the same wait and see category with what Montreal has done. Can Dadonoff and Verbata replace what they lose in Smith and Marchessault? That's a tough call. The salary cap on Riley I get, but I don't know. Did they use it in the best possible way? That's a remains to be seen kind of deal. I don't know if this makes them a playoff team next year, which, I mean, if you're not in the playoffs and you're being active in free agency, obviously that's what you're trying to do is you're trying to get in. You need to get in the tournament. And with that, I want to go to Carolina, which was what Justin Williams said when he re-signed back with his former team. He said, and I think Carolina probably a bit of an overreach on the number, but short term. But Justin Williams said he believes that that's a team that can make that playoff and take that step next year. And he knows very well that all it takes is to get into the tournament. He won the cup with the Kings as an eighth seed who made it into the playoffs on the second to the last day of the season. So is Carolina that team next year?
Yeah, I mean, the only negative I can say about Carolina, I can say this about a few teams there, is the division they're in. I mean, if Carolina was in the Atlantic, I can make a pretty strong argument that they're going to be one of the top, finishing the one of the top three spots. But unfortunately for them, they're in the Metro, who's going to house both wild card spots next year. A little preview there for our
our preview.
Right. Drop a little something there. But, yeah, I think, you know, again, when players get older, there's always, you know, when is the, you know, corner going to turn, you know? And keep in mind, you know, playing with the players he did in Washington. But having said that, if Justin Williams, he can score 16, 17 goals versus 24, 25 goals next year with Carolina and still be a very productive player. And especially off the ice, you know, Marcus Kruger, who they picked up, gives them good depth. Trevor Rand-Reimsdyk gives them experience on the blue line and makes their blue line deeper. And while, you know, the jury is still out if Scott Darling's the number one, there is no doubt that Scott Darling and Cam Ward as a tandem is a much better situation than Ward and Eddie Lack. So while there's questions there, they definitely greatly upgraded. And maybe, you know, maybe Darling plays, you know, it's a little different tandem from the standpoint Darling plays 50 games and Ward plays 32 kind of thing. He plays more than your average backup. So I think they're heading in the right direction, to say the least. They have a lot of young talent coming. I remember reading Zach Devine, who really liked their draft. They seem to draft well. So, you know, we'll see. Like I said, they've improved a little bit each year, and they were not that far away from a playoff spot last year. So I think it's definitely a possibility.
I'm going to go back to my recurring theme here. Including Scott Darling, I think that's 9 Stanley Cups in the locker room that they've added. That's huge. I think for the youngsters on that club, you bring in veteran leadership. You bring in guys that have been there. Even you're gonna see guys that have worked hard their whole career. Show the rest of the squad what it takes. I don't think that intangible can be overlooked in what Carolina's done. I think maybe that's a large part of bringing in these players. Is putting championship experience right in the middle of that locker room. And I think, and I'll drop a little too. I think Carolina, you know, they were in it this year, right down, you know, pretty close to the end of the season for that last spot. And I know it was wild. You were following it super close because the Islanders were right there too. But Carolina
and Tampa,
Jersey was there for a while as well. But, you know, I might really like Carolina next year. We'll have to wait and see on that. I'm well documented. I think the more experience and the more times that you have a name on the Stanley Cup in your room, the better it is for everybody in the organization, and it gives them credibility, I think, which is huge, in my humble opinion. But I'm gonna say for me, I think Carolina gets in the playoffs next year. I'm gonna say that right now. I think I like what they've done. It's you know, Justin Williams not going to go home and score 30 goals, but I think the way he approaches the game, as well as TVR and Kruger, know what it takes. And I think that leadership group has just got a huge boost, a huge shot in the arm in Carolina. If you want to put grades on what these teams have done, I'm giving Carolina an A right now. And we'll see how that turns out. Let's see. Caps have been busy, staying in the East, staying in the East. We all knew that the Washington, you know, this was kind of their make or break season with some of the contracts that were up and where they were going to go. I never put credence into the rumors that were out there that Ovechkin was available to be had. I never bought into that. You don't just do that. But this was that season. You know what I mean? When it's lined up for you, and once again they couldn't get out of the second round. So super busy. They got Oshie done, Kuznetsov and Orlov. Obviously Shattenkirk, Alsner and Schmidt. They got to be looking at redoing the decor. Let Marcus Johansson go. I see the need to make the moves, but are some of these moves just seem like they're making moves for making moves' sake. Some of them seem like they're making moves because the salary cap wouldn't allow them to actually improve the roster. And, you know, you lock up Oshie because that's off an Orlov. That's going to be your core going forward, obviously. So Shattenkirk never really fit in, I would say, with that group. Alsner's big loss. What the Caps are taking a step backward?
Yeah, well, to answer your question, they're in a cap crunch, no pun intended. They have 17 players signed. I mean, they have all their quote-unquote, well, RFA is now signed, but they have $4 million for six players. So if you do the math, that's slightly under $700,000 per player. So you're looking at signing guys like Devontae Smith-Pelly, who they signed last week on a two-way deal with a cap hit of $650,000. So, for instance, Daniel Winnick, who's probably one of the better free agents out there, who's a great role player, who'll probably garner around $1 million, that is too expensive for the Capitals. So that's the crunch that they're in and why they moved Johansson to the Devils for two draft picks, who aren't the Devils' draft picks, by the way. They were picks that the Devils acquired from Florida and Toronto, so they were able to hold on to their own picks, which is good in those second and third rounds, because I think they're still part of a rebuild, even with that good move. Look, there's no question in my mind that Washington, one of the big reasons they've finished in the regular season winning the President's Cup is because of their depth. That has taken a gigantic hit. I mean, again, they lost Justin Williams, they lose a Marcus Johansson. I mean, what a decor to lose. Shattenkirk, Elsner, and Nate Schmidt, I'll take that as my top three any day.
So, sure.
Those top three defensemen that they have, and Niskanen, Karlsson, and Orlov, they all are going to have to stay healthy next year. If there was a major injury to one of them, that would be a big problem. Now, I am not telling you that I think the Capitals are not going to make the playoffs next year. In terms of is it possible that they can go from being clearly the team that finished that's won the division the last 2 years to a wild card team? Yeah, I think that is possible. And they're going to have to stay healthy with their core players because they're going to be relying on some kids, some finding some bargains off the free agency, if you will, at this point, to contribute. So I think there is a lot of questions in Washington, and in terms of, you know, being a cup contender, they've definitely taken a step back. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and going back to my Carey Price theme, who may be a better with the defense that the Habs brought in. I mean, Braden Holtby's been off the chart the last two or three years and been phenomenal with that group in front of him. And one thing that we need to see is if Holtby can continue to do what he's done with that revamped decor in front of me. That's a question mark for me with this team going forward too. That's always a weird dichotomy when you talk about how the top six affects the goalie and how the confidence in the goalie and the goalie play, you know, in turn frees up the six to be more offensive minded going forward. And well, that's one question that I'm going to have for the Caps is that can Holtby still maintain the video game numbers he's been putting up the last couple of years with that revamped decor. When we saw Dallas and St. Louis notably last year, and you know Florida as well, go through this, I'm changing up my philosophy and defense, going from playoff teams, you know, two of the three missed the playoffs entirely after going through a top four change. And it really, Florida standpoint, an entire change in philosophy from what they were doing on defense. That's going to be my question. And I'm going to have to look at that when we go into our previews shows next season on, you know, how that decor is going to maintain what they've been able to do, and will Holtby be able to maintain? Can they go to a wild card spot? Absolutely, Chris. I agree with you 100%. Let's go to your hometown. Let's look at the New York Rangers because there were some trades they did that we don't have listed on our notes that are going to affect that squad next year, and also the free agency that they've done, bringing in Shattenkirk most notably. What do you make of and if you're going to put them in a capsule, put into the Dominic Moore and the deals with Phoenix and the free agency, what are we looking at with the Rangers next year? Are they looking more, I think for me, they're looking more trying to maybe get the personnel more in line. We know from Coach Vigneault's time in Vancouver that he does like a higher paced kind of a more skill oriented squad for his style of coaching now. And if full marks to Coach Vigneault for being able to take this team, deep into the playoffs with maybe personnel that doesn't actually fit his style. But is that kind of where we see New York heading, is moving towards that Pittsburgh style game with some of these moves?
I think that's what they're hoping.
right.
They taken a big hit at center, losing Lindbergh in expansion and trading Stephon to Arizona. And the fact that they're counting on, and I'm a big fan of the kid, Elias Andersson, who did play on in the Swedish league with Linus Soderstrom, by the way, to win the Swiss championship on the team over there against men, but asking an 18-year-old, now granted, you know, he'll be their, whatever, third-line center, but it seems like they're banking on him being one of their centers. And And then I think there's a big drop off between Rondo, who's now in Arizona, part of that trade, and Pavlik. You know, Brendan Smith to me is a nice player. But having said that, he's not a top four. He's probably an excellent third pairing defenseman. So, you know, getting 4.3, he's the Chris Russell of the Eastern Conference in a different way, a different player. I mean, Shattenkirk, no doubt, is a sexy move. He will help. He will obviously give them more offense. He'll presumably help them on that power play, which has been a problem for years. So, though, you know, one would have thought that Keith Yandle, they traded for a couple of years, 2-3 years ago, was going to be the solution to that, and it wasn't. But there's no doubt, I think, I mean, a lot of people have beaten up Kevin Shattenkirk, local kid from New Rochelle, Westchester County. He's going to help. He's going to be a really good player for them. The thing is, if people are counting on him to be a difference maker, I would say if you look at Kevin Shattenkirk's career, mostly in St. Louis, who's been a very strong team, who have not been able to get to the promised land, and then trading to the deadline, adding to that super caps team, and basically none of his teams were able to get to that promised land. So I'm not blaming Kevin Shattenkirk for that. My point being is him alone is not going to be, you know, is he a difference maker player? He needs support.
It's tough.
I know that. And
yeah.
So I think the Rangers are, you know, I still question about are they strong enough in their own. And the goalie situation, you keep in mind, Lundqvist is 35. He'll be 36 next March before the playoffs start next year. There's, like I said, questions at center. I think there's a lot of questions there. There's a lot of talent, but I think there's also a lot of questions there. It'll be an interesting year for the Rangers.
Well, are we going to leave the book open on them? They're still a playoff team, right?
I think
tough to tell.
I think the Metro, you know, I would say if they were in the Atlantic for sure, but in the Metro, you know, you got a lot of tough teams there. Jersey, definitely not. Philly, probably not, because I'm not a fan of their goaltending. And as much as I'm a fan of Nolan Patrick, asking a 19-year-old rookie, you know, they did basically move Brayden Schenn to open up a spot for him. But, you know, the Islanders and Carolina didn't make it. And those are both really good teams moving forward. It's, you know, the Rangers got off to that fast start last year. And then basically from January on was like a 500 team. I think they're going to be in that mix. It's going to be very close. But I'm not ready to write it down in ink in terms of them making the playoffs.
I think a lot's going to depend on if Lundqvist can have a full healthy season. He's had, you know, the bug has bit him a bit the last couple of years. And I mean, I know they're bringing Pavelic as a backup. Goaltending is a theme that I'm seeing as we go through all this. They're going to have to rely a lot more on Lundqvist maybe than they have in the last couple of years. And if he goes out, you know, we talked about if one of the Caps' top three defensemen goes out long term, if Lundqvist goes out long term, I could see New York taking that step back and missing the playoffs entirely next year.
Absolutely.
You mentioned that they lost the Lundberg and Stepan down the middle. Tough to replace that kind of center depth. And, you know, if you go down the middle and then if Lundqvist goes out, that could be a tough season next year for Rangers fans.
Even if he just misses a month, I mean, I'll give you a case in point. I brought this point up, I think, towards the end of the regular season. The Islanders were madly inconsistent last year. They got off to a horrible start, okay? But at the end of the day, the reason that the Rangers, who, you know, comfortably made the playoffs as the number one wild card, and the Islanders didn't, was because the Rangers averaged slightly more than 1 point in the standings per month. So if Lundqvist, at 35 years of age, who's coming off a knee procedure, I believe, this summer, were to miss, let's say, because he is getting older and something were to happen and he would be out a month, well, if you could see, you know, people might say, well, how can you say that? How can you say that they're iffy? Because the difference in this league is so small, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
In terms of making, and the fact that that is the fact of being in the Metro is a big theme of that. Same thing when we talk about some of the Central teams. Same theme in that case with the top six out there.
Well, let's go to the team they're all chasing. They've lost quite a few pieces. Is Pittsburgh still the best team going into next season?
Yeah, they've definitely taken a hit, which usually happens more so this year. First of all, just losing Fleury from this standpoint. You know, Pittsburgh last year had the benefit of having two number one goalies. And we saw that as being a huge coup in the regular season when Matt Murray missed some time, and as well as the beginning of the postseason when Matt Murray pulled up lame at the beginning of it. So not having Fleury and having Niemi, who I think if Murray's healthy, being a guy who could play 20, 25 games, or being a guy for the first half, if you will, you know, could do enough. And then they have the youngster, I think his name is Carey, who they like, but I guess obviously they don't feel he's ready yet, but he could be in the near future. So that's a big, you know, that's a big luxury that's now gone. You know, you look at, you know, defensively losing, again, not that these guys are superstars, but losing Hinsey, Daly, Kunitz, and Bonino, that's a big hit to your depth, in terms of experience. So they're going to rely on a few more kids. I would not be surprised if, you know, somewhere out there, if they feel this is the right fit. I mean, Matt Cullen, although he is 40, I don't know what his plans are. He hasn't announced his retirement. Could they bring him back on a 1-year deal? I even heard Yager's mentioned, which would be a great story. But they have some kids that they like. And obviously, the last point about it all is, look, they've gone the gauntlet the last 2 years. So that, you would think, even though you didn't see that impact last year, I think you might see that impact this year. From the standpoint, what I mean is, you know, in terms of winning the division and going, you know, and being a team that, you know, finishes with whatever, 114 points, whatever they finished with. They might wind up being, you know, 103-point team, and they definitely make the playoffs, and maybe they'll get some reinforcements at the trade deadline and all that and be ready to rock and roll and be dangerous. But I don't think there's going to be an urgency. Like, they have to win the division. Like, they could say, hey, we could be the wild card. I mean, well, quite frankly, if you're Pittsburgh, Washington, and Columbus, like last year, the team that won the division obviously got a much, quote-unquote, softer landing in terms of the wild card, although they got Toronto, who gave Washington all kind of fits. But if you were Pittsburgh, you got Columbus. And if you were Columbus, you got Pittsburgh. So from that standpoint, unless you win the division, theoretically, you know, what's the difference of, you know, there's really no reward because how good that division is in terms of getting the second and third slot. So they're definitely going to make the playoffs next year. They're definitely a contender, but they've taken a hit, and much more so than the year before.
I agree. And I remember thinking when they the Kessel deal had like 10 players going back and forth. It wasn't just a small-time thing. And I, at the time, and go back and listen to it, I said that was just way too much for one player. You know, overplayed. Where's the depth coming from? And I was, I'll say it right now, I was on record way against that deal. And so what'd they do? They won two Stanley Cups. Can they do the same thing that Chicago does in just retooling it every year? Then, and you know, we haven't really talked about Chicago at all. They've made a few moves as well. I don't know if that, you know, let's say Fleury, Knits, and Bonino. That's three really big pieces. Daly as well. That's really big pieces. When the Blackhawks retooled after, go ahead.
Pittsburgh has done a much better job of in terms of their support players behind their core players, and Pittsburgh has had better overall goaltending. With no disrespect to Corey Crawford, that has been the two differences in terms of, you know, why Pittsburgh these last couple of years with their cap issues, if you will, for having those big players versus the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that. But now comes that they slip into the window that Chicago slipped into around maybe 2014-ish when you know that pipeline depth is it there? Can they fill the holes? And then what we didn't really put Chicago in our notes this week, but just to segue a little bit into Chicago, they, you know, move out the bread man, they bring back Sod, a little bit of what's new is old again, or what's old is new again, I should say, in Chicago. Just real quick, what do you think Chicago, have they done enough to get back to where their fans expect them to be year in and year out? Which is contending for the Stanley Cup. The first round playoff exit, if you watch the press conference, is a very unhappy general manager in Chicago. And he's made some changes there, you know, losing a couple pieces. Ooh, what? Just a quick off the cuff on Chicago, if you could.
Yeah, I think they're in a very tough division, so that's not going to change. So they're going to have a very tough first-round opponent. I would worry if something happened to Corey Crawford with them, going with the kid that they got from Columbus. Obviously, they're minus Marion Hossa for the whole year next year, so that's a big hit on their changes. Yes. Do I think that Chicago's going to be one of the top three teams in the Central? Yeah, most likely, yes. They're going to be a playoff team next year. But once the playoffs start, I think it surprised me that they made a run. No. Would it surprise me if they lost in the first round again? No.
I've said it before about Chicago, and that's a team that, I mean, they're not dead until you stick the knife in their throat with your foot on their chest. And I'm not going to fall into the same trap that I fell into a couple of years back on the show, where I wrote them off because then they went and won the Stanley Cup again 3 years ago. But do I think that the challenges this time around are a little more unique than they've had to face in the last couple of years? And do I think that the Panarin move is going to really impact them, not just in missing his offense, but in finding chemistry to play with Patrick Kane on the second line? Absolutely, I do. I think that's I think the league's moving towards the more dynamic offensive style approach. I don't think that's any secret. And then, without even looking it up, Panarin had to be their third or fourth leading scorer.
Yep.
And then you replace that with a more defensively minded two-way player coming in that is familiar with the team, obviously. I don't know. There's a dynamic that might be missing in Chicago that they've had the last couple of years, I should say. That I mean, just watching Kane and Panarin play with each other, and the dynamic they brought when they were on the ice together is always fun to watch. So I question where that is going to come from again with what they've been able to do so far. You can't count that team out no matter what they do, but I'm with you. I won't be surprised if they're in the finals in the West next year. I won't be surprised if they run into a buzzsaw in the first round again and have a very tough road through the playoffs. That's a tough division too. Could they slip down to a wild card spot, maybe the three spot with the moves Dallas made? Are they going to be back up in the top of that division again. I think bringing in Bishop was huge. Everybody knows that that's been, you know, their goaltender situation, cap wise, on ice performance, every other way you can look at it has been, it didn't work. Whatever the plan was there in the net did not work. So Niemi's out. Bishop's number one. Lettinen's probably maybe not happy going back down to the number two role there, but I think that they're obviously their goaltending. I was a big fan. I'm a big fan of Bishop. I was hoping that somehow he was going to end up in Vegas, but they end up with Fleury, which, you know, isn't a bad consolation prize there. But bringing in Martin Hanzel, he's a little bit older, biting the big bullet with Radulov. I think he fits more into what Dallas likes to do. Now you bring in Coach Hitchcock, who's more of a defensive structured coach than Lindy Ruff, with more of a wide open style while he was there. The personnel, I think Radulov will just, you know, one of the league's best offenses, and adding Radulov obviously doesn't hurt that. Well, let's go come out to the West now and take a look at Dallas. What do you make of them back? I think back in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, and then they also traded for Mark Mathias from Vegas, so they added a veteran
right.
Defensive blue liner who played with Carlson and excelled, letting Carlson do his thing. And one would think he would team him up with a John Klingberg in that regard. Yeah, I would say that Dallas, though, added some a lot of depth in terms of their defense. They're still going to be young. They're more experienced. They're getting better. They added an elite coach. Not that Lindy Ruff's a bad coach, but Ken Hitchcock's an elite coach. They added a two-way center in Hanzel, and they added a dynamic offensive player in Radulov to go with their other existing dynamic players. And they added a guy who's been a Vezina finalist two of the last 4 years. He just has to be healthy. In that division, no doubt. I think they're a favorite to land a playoff spot. I'm not sure if it's going to be the wild card in the top three. That division is, we don't have Winnipeg in our notes, but I like what they did, even though they were kind of more under the radar moves, that they got better defensively in their own end, and they got stronger in goal and more depth in goal. So when I look at those six teams, those top six teams, and this will probably lead into our discussion about what Colorado should do and where they're at. I mean, you think about Winnipeg and Dallas not making the playoffs last year. Again, if they were in another division, I would say that they would be playoff teams, but at most the Central can house in the playoffs, so the West is five teams. So that means one of those top six teams is not going to make the playoffs. I have no clue who that's going to be. Probably the team that gets hurt most by the injury bug. But that is going to be a really evil division. And you got to like where Dallas is heading. Now, you know, in terms of cup contention, we'll have to see in terms of that young defense. But for sure, they've had a strong offseason, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't say where I'm going to put them yet, but right. I'm going to say that they're a solid B plus A in their offseason work so far. And I think I'm going to take the wild card label off of Radulov this season. He said he right. showed signs that he's matured from his first time around. You know, Montreal gave him the second chance, and I think he proved just that. And I like that, you know, term and length, cap number, whatever. Just on ice, I like the signing. I'm a big Bishop fan, as well stated. Dallas is going back to the playoffs next year. If Dallas is well, as Matt Pryor, let's say lukewarm on Florida, you're ice cold. I haven't talked with Matt yet, but I'm pretty sure he's happy with all things Dallas Stars coming, you know, getting ready for next season. I got to believe that.
Absolutely. I got to believe that too.
So, Preds James Neal's out. He's in Vegas. They bring in Bonino, Hardinal, Emelin for the defense. Another deal with Vegas there. Can Nashville recapture what they did this year? Are they a one-off? Or is that a nucleus with what they've done now in the offseason, bringing in, you know, Cups with Bonino, bringing that experience into the locker room? Emelin for the D, Hardinal for grit. And, you know, Hardinal always surprises me when I look at how many goals he scores. I always think of him as the gritty two-way 22-point player. And then you look down and he's got 20 goals again. Is Nashville, they're going to be a top five team in the West again, I would think, right?
Yeah, I would think so, too. I mean, granted, you know, they lost probably of the four players you mentioned. James Neal is the best goal scorer, but, you know, Nick Foligno is probably the best two-way player, and they added some great depth. And, you know, keep in mind, Emelin's going to be on their third pairing of defense. And
right.
You know, he was the top
their defense scorer might be goal. They might have the best defensive core in the league next season.
Right. And Hardinal, again, is going to be asked to be a role player. And so – on a one-year deal. So I think they added great depth to their team. I think they've had all the moves really fit into their team, what they're trying to do, how they play. You know, again, the problem is the division, how deep it is.
It's a meat grinder.
They're definitely going to be, in my opinion, one of the top three teams in the Central. And then, you know, obviously they need to be healthy and playing well come playoff time. But can they make another run next year? Absolutely.
Well, as a good friend of the show, Jillian Fisher, at Fisher Jillian on Twitter, a couple years ago, we had a real good conversation with her about the culture in Nashville. And, you know, social media, oh, look at the brand new hockey fans. Well, no, that clearly is not the case. There's a hockey culture in Nashville that's, I don't know if it's fueled by all that nonsense, was fueled by that's jealousy of how Nashville performed in the playoffs and how their fans supported them, or just people that follow their own team and not the sport of hockey. That ownership group, and we brought on Mr. Bradford, who wrote the book The Making of Smashville, which is a fantastic read, and brought up a lot of points on how the Vegas market and the Vegas ownership group could, you know, take a lesson from how to build a hockey culture in a non-traditional market, because that's been being built, and it didn't just happen this year. That's been growing consistently, and they put the stadium down where it needed to be to get the excitement in the community. Congratulations to the Nashville Predators, a well-deserved season. I don't, for me, think it was lightning in a bottle. I picked them in our Central preview show to win that division outright. And, you know, for whatever reason in the regular season, that didn't happen, but I had all the confidence in the world that they could make that kind of a run. And go back and listen to I'm not just speaking after the fact, go back and listen to the Central Division preview show for the season that we did. And that was my pick to win that division. And I hard to say. I think they're probably a little deeper on the forwards core after this. I guess, like I said, probably right now on paper, it's definitely a top three defense core in the league next season. If Pekka Rinne can do what he did this season, and they were able to rest him and not get him into the 65-70 games played range, and he was able to enter the playoffs fresh, I don't see any reason at all Nashville can't have another strong postseason. I don't think they've been weakened at all. James Neal's a tough player to lose, community favorite, locker room favorite. But again, you're bringing in Bonino and a guy who has won a cup. That's my recurring theme today. Two cups. You bring that into the locker room of a team who seems to be right on the cusp of you know, being one of those contenders for the Stanley Cup the next few years. That does not hurt your culture any. And I think that's a solid signing there. Look for the Preds to go ahead.
One last thing about Nashville. I'm not saying that they're the favorite in the West to represent the West in the Stanley Cup next year, but there's no one who is more of a favorite than them, if that makes any sense. So they're at least They're at least on equal footing with any team you want to pick in the Western Conference.
Yeah, if someone wanted to do a little compare and contrast essay with Team A versus the Nashville Preds, and you were doing just matchup work with them, you're not going to come out and have a 70-30 against Nashville with any team in the West by any stretch of the imagination. I think they were able to maintain what they had, you know, minus Neal, and I like the pieces they brought in. So it's going to be a fun season next year. It pretty much covers everything we talked about. We'll finish the show with a Vegas note. We are the Vegas Hockey Podcast.
Do you want to talk about Matt Duchene real quick?
Yeah, you can. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think I think him and Landeskog, I think Sakic wants too much for him. I think it was maybe it was prudent of him, being how horrible of a season they had, and it was prudent of him to see what was out there. But you're not going to get a Gretzky return for those two players. And I think it was due diligence on his part to see what was out there, and nothing came back that overwhelmed him and said, this is a deal we can't pass up. And I don't think he's going anywhere. What's your take on that?
This is my take on it. Clearly, Duchene has been shopped since last offseason. And clearly, this last November, Shaka came out with that, pre-Stan Bowman pounding the table of saying, you know, this is unacceptable. I only have three players in my organization that are untouchable, two of which was his top two prospects, along with Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, really since then, as, you know, not just put Duchene, you know, it's one thing to put Duchene out there to see if there's a deal that makes sense for you quietly. It's another thing to do that and put him out there publicly through the trade deadline all season. And clearly, with only 2 years of controllability, Matt Duchene is not going to be part of the bus moving forward in Colorado's eyes. And
no, because they just drove the bus over him. He's not going to get on the bus.
That's
when they ran him
over. Right.
It's not going to happen.
Even if Colorado at this point said, you know what, I think we've been looking at this wrong, and maybe we should be thinking about keeping and building around Matt Duchene, who, you know, by the way, I read today online, he's getting married today, so mazel tov to him. You know, I don't think Matt Duchene is going to be looking to sign an extension with the Colorado Avalanche. And then when I look at this division and where they are at here and now, they don't have the answers in goal either now or in the future. They don't have the answers on the blue line between now and the near future. They don't have the answers in terms of depth between now and the future. In fact, even though they've been a bad team the last couple of years, they don't have a great prospect pipeline. There is so much work to do, and they're in a killer division. Now, putting my Islander pom-poms aside for a second, if I look at what the Islanders offered them, and I do that in terms of just an analysis of a return, they offered them Travis Hamonic and their first-round pick in next year's draft, which is being evaluated as a killer draft in a good way. And then Hamonic winds up going to Calgary for Calgary's first round next year. second round next year and a future second. If you told me today, which Colorado could have done, that I can get Matt Duchene, I can get two firsts in next year's draft to go along with my first and have three first round picks in next year's killer draft, add a couple of seconds. That's how you build a team and get things turned around. His value is only going to drop between now and kicking the can down, because that's what they're doing. They're kicking the can down the road. And controllability is a big thing. Like Carolina, people said, well, that would be a great fit, Matt Duchene to Carolina. Mark Francis came out and said, I am not trading, not mentioning Matt Duchene, big future assets for a guy who's going to be here, for any player who's going to be here for a year or two and then walk out the door. So the value is only going to go down. And if Duchene does not bounce back from last year, which was a beyond a poor year, or if he gets injured, the value is going to plummet. So this is, to me, his high watermark, and expecting to get four premium assets is, you could say, well, that's what you should get and this and that. You're in La La Land. I mean, you really are. And there is a time and a place when a player's value is at its highest, and when you wait too long, it goes down. And I think that's what Sakic has done. So given where the Avalanche organization is, they should not be focusing on who can give me a defenseman now. They should be focusing on the best future package that they can get on players who can help them in the near future between next season and the season beyond, and people they can build around, i.e. top prospects and first-round picks from next year. So that is the way they should go. That is not how they're going to go. And next year in that division, it's going to be another nightmare here.
I will say it is a shame that they've fourth overall pick, the way the lottery turned out for us. I mean, I guess, and I can't accuse Colorado of tanking. They're just a bad hockey club. And when your GM's publicly throwing your two best players out the window, that doesn't help anything either. So a disaster year for Colorado, no question. And
it's going to be another disaster next year.
It's going to be another disaster. And, you know, if you rewind the clock 15 years and look at where Edmonton was, and it took a player like, you know, Connor McDavid and Shirelli coming in and bringing in a couple other players to lock down things. Two of their number one overall picks are out the door already in Edmonton. It's going to take that long and that lucky of a pick to get this franchise started again. I agree with you 100%, Chris.
Last point I'll make, keep in mind, Matt Duchene's agent, Pat Burleson, is kind of one of these super agents. And, you know, this story may not be over yet in terms of this summer. It might be cooling at this point, but it could pick up again as we get closer to training camp. And his agent says, Matt wants out. This is ridiculous for everyone. You need to cut the best deal that you can. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem here. And that's the last thing that Colorado does. Maybe they do that quietly. So
why would they though? Why would they do that quietly after what management's done publicly?
Oh, that's true.
What do they owe Colorado?
No, I think quietly from their own PR standpoint, so they don't make it look like, you know, Matt's this bad guy, or you know, people start taking pot shots at him, or other teams getting scared to acquire him.
Well, I'll say this for both Duchene and Landeskog, who's, I guess, been taken off the table, or at least not as publicly shopped the last six months.
You don't really hear
both players have been very quiet. They haven't gone to the media and complained about the situation. Hockey players are hockey players. They've been very humble about it. What's being done behind the scenes, we don't know. But there hasn't been the public backlash from either player going through this whole process. So
Kudos to both those gentlemen for handling a very difficult situation in as professional as a manner as they can.
Landeskog, point here, Landeskog is signed for the next 4 years, whereas Duchesne signed for the next 2 years. That's the problem, is years of controllability. On top of the fact that, he had 41 points last year and didn't even hit 20 goals, and he was healthy the whole year and was a minus 34. Anyway, let's finish up with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yes, let's do that. We've got a couple minutes left to go. So since the expansion draft and the entry draft, they've made their moves. Recently, Emelin's gone, picking up a third in 2019. They traded for Kruger. It was a deal that was done before the expansion draft, but there was a salary payment due Kruger on July 1st that the Blackhawks picked up. And then they flip him, they're picking up a fifth in 2018. Overall, I think McPhee just killed it at the entry draft. His first four picks, and also, you know, another shout out to our Sweden friends, Eric Brännström might be the steal of the draft. I was expecting Liljegren to go in that spot, and McPhee obviously and Crew obviously like Brännström better towards the puck moving dynamic ability that he has. So Sweden hockey fans, take note. Brännström's arrival 2018-2019, get your Vegas Golden Knights hats out. It's I'd like the Lechishin pick at the end of the third round a whole lot. Coming off his knee injury, if he can get his leg back to 100%, that third round pick right there might look really good in 2 or 3 years too. But
you want to feel old? You want to feel old?
No, I do not, sir.
You know, that kid you brought up, his dad is Curtis Lechishin, who played in the league a number of years. I'm sure you remember him.
For sure, and I remember. Yes, sir. I love, when you have that hockey bloodline, the kid, you know, he's never going to be overwhelmed with a moment. He's been around the culture for his whole life. You get kind of a built-in stability and maturity about how to go about your business, how to act when you're at the rink, how to work, what you need to do to become a professional. He's been, since day one, the kid's been in that culture. And if he hadn't hurt his knee, projected late first, early second round picked instead of the end of the third round. So I like everything that they've done on the amateur side. They still need to take a few million dollars off their cap to be where they want to be. And they do still have pieces on defense that, need to move. You can't go into the season with 10 D-men on NHL contracts. And now I think, as we said before, when we were wrapping up that with Dana Lane, that now the league kind of has the leverage on McPhee as opposed to, before when McPhee held all the cards, they can make him twist and turn a little bit, maybe lowball for some of the D-men that he's going to have to move. And that's fine. That's turnabout is fair play. You knew that was going to happen if there wasn't a big rush for defensemen right out of the gate. And I have faith that McPhee and the Knight staff will get the best possible out of the 10 D-men left. We know which way he's going. He's keeping his younger players. He's keeping Schmidt, I believe. So out of the 10 left, who do you think can bring the biggest return after looking at the free agent market?
Yeah, I think what would be wise after moving Emelin. And, he did pick up a third rounder, but it was in 2019. believe it or not, the Knights already have 12 picks in 2019. I think they have three in the second and three in the third, as well as their first round pick.
They only have six picks
in next year's draft. But they only have six picks in next year's draft at this point. Obviously, they have their first round pick. So I would look at those 10 defensemen and say, okay, Griffin Reinhardt is probably going to start here in the AHL. He was mostly in the AHL last year. So he will be kind of a reinforcement down below. And then I would probably carry eight defensemen for the opening night roster. And at this point, I would not move unless I could get close to fair value a Jason Garrison or Stiza, who they got from Vancouver. The reason being is I think those two guys are going to be very wanted and valuable at next year's trade deadline. You look at last year's
trade deadline. I agree with that.
And Detroit got from the Rangers for Brendan Smith a second and a third. Now, it was over the course of 2 years, but they got the Rangers second this year, and I think they got the Rangers third next year. So I think if you trade those guys now, because of their cap hit, because how everyone's cap strapped, you're going to get half the value as opposed to waiting. And I think it's better to they're a better team from the get-go with those guys in the lineup. So I look like I would look at a guy like John Merrill, who's, you know, only 25. You know, he's really a third-pairing defenseman, but because of his age, because he has a low cap hit, you might actually wind up getting, you know, a better pick moving him now. Let's say a third-round pick next year or something along those lines, or maybe a fourth. That would be the better way to go. And then look for them to continue to sign people to two-way contracts and give them more depth, because in case of injury or injuries, which will happen, that they have people to go to and they don't have to rush somebody in from the AHL.
No, I think you're right, and that could be very well what happens, unless somebody missed out on somebody they were looking at in free agency and need to put a player into their top four. It doesn't hurt McPhee at all to, and I know you're very familiar with Reinhardt being an Islanders draft pick. It doesn't hurt at all to just put him in the A, let him keep growing. Sometimes defensemen take 4 or 5 years to develop into, and you know, back in the day, if you were a defenseman and you were drafted at 18, you know, you didn't see the NHL until you were 24, 25 years old. That this you know, era of Drew Doughty and coming up as an 18-year-old kid is and playing defense in the National Hockey League, that would have been unheard of 10, 15 years ago.
To prove that point that you just made, Johnny Boychuk, who's not a superstar, but he's a solid, strong, two-way guy. It took him until the age of 25 to make it to the NHL.
Yeah.
Just to show how things have changed. So don't rush Reinhardt. Then you'll have Eglin and Stoner as your seventh and eighth defensemen. And then you have Schmidt, Theodore, Spezza, Garrison. Help me out here. I'm doing this off the top of my head. And then the other two defense. Too many to name as your third pairing. So
that's an NHL quality top six. No question.
They'll be in the. So that's what I would look now. If someone's willing to give you a second and a third for Spezza, it would probably be more likely to be Spezza because he has his cap hit is about $1.4 million cheaper, and at this time of the year, every dollar counts for everybody. You know, so be it. Then jump on it. But if not, I would look to move Merrill.
Yeah. Colin Miller is still on the fold. He's one of the guys that'll be in the top six.
Oh, that's it. That exactly. He'll be on the third pair. That'd be great.
Yeah, beautiful. Fast, hard shot. He can run your second power play unit, I believe. What's on the roster, he'll be logging heavy second power play minutes, I believe. He's got the hardest shot and fastest skater award in the AHL All-Star game a couple years back. So that was one of the picks that went kind of under the radar as a young developing guy, but he'll definitely be on that opening night roster for sure. And I agree. There's no rush for McPhee to do anything right now. You go into the season with what you have, if you want, and you know, you might want to slip somebody through waivers.
One guy. Yeah, I don't. I think you're probably going to want. He's going to have to move one guy.
I think the return, you know, right now, I don't think the return is there. I think if you get closer to the season and teams take a look at what they got, the return will pick up a little bit the farther into the summer we go. Yep. So I think patience is a virtue. He doesn't have to rush anything right now, and I don't think he will.
I agree with that.
I've said from the start when they started putting the staff together that this is an all-star front office staff. And I think they proved that and from their scouting, their pro scouting, their amateur scouting, their ability to deal. They've proven themselves to be a fantastic front office so far. And just for Vegas Golden Knights fans, be proud of what your team did. People new to hockey or whatever may not understand how tough it is to make deals, to do the things that they did and finagle their way into this year's amateur draft and select the players that they did. They did a fantastic job. A plus for the Vegas Golden Knights. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call it a wrap on the 2016-2017 National Hockey season.
We might do a couple of shows. I would say I'm hoping we could do two shows between now and Labor Day. So with a couple of Vegas-oriented guests. So we'll keep everyone updated on that. And then look for the next season, if you will, if you want to draw the demarcation line set of shows to start mid-September with our season previews, divisional preview shows. So we'll break down each division, have a special guest with that, bring Dana Lane back. Each show will have a Vegas aspect. So, but hopefully we could do, you know, even a couple of 40-minute shows over the summer, maybe one late July, one mid to third week of August kind of thing, and then get ready for a new season come mid-September.
Looking forward to it. It's going to be a fantastic time here in Vegas. And we have a couple things already cooking with some people coming to town, kind of doing a co-host podcast deal while they're in town. Nothing set in stone, so I don't want to talk about it yet, but we're going to have a really good season next year, and we're looking forward to it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are putting the bow tie on the 2016-2017 National Hockey League season, the last season without the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Thank you once again, everybody. Russ and Chris, make sure you guys go over to Grandstand Sports and the Audio Boom channel that Russ has. Check out all their content as well as hitting the play button on our podcast while you're on those sites. We look forward to the new partnerships going into next season. And with that, for Chris, I'm Mark. We're gone.